Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye Sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Here we go on a Tuesday afternoon. It's Hawk Central live with you until 7 o'clock here on KXNO, 1460 AM and 106.3 FM. Chad Lysico in studio with me, Ross Peterson, and our buddy Mark Emmert on the phone with us, as he is most weeks. Mark, good to hear from you, man. How you been?
I've been good. How are you, Ross?
I'm doing well, buddy. A fun week to be a Hawkeye fan, for sure. Chad and I were just talking about this as we were bounding up the stairs here at 21-41 Grand. We had a bit of a different reaction to that first game, that first win against Rutgers. So this could be a fun conversation. Chad, how's your Tuesday afternoon, man?
Not too bad. I wasn't out in the cold too long, so thank you.
No,
it's good.
Nobody could be out there too long right now, man. Luckily, we're up here in the north where we're kind of used to this. The stuff that's happening down in the Texas is crazy right now to see online. So let's just keep it warm up here, man. We'll talk about Hawks. We can take your phone calls, 284-5966. Different tone, honestly, to kind of start the show here than it has been the last couple weeks because the Hawkeyes had such a productive week. Nice wins, Chad, over Rutgers and Michigan State. Let's go back to that the first win over Rutgers, 79-66 win for the Hawks. Nice performance. They come out, they beat a ranked opponent and do so in pretty convincing fashion. I will be honest, the thing that you and I disagreed on was after that Rutgers game, I was hesitant to start that confidence train up again. I was hesitant to say things like they righted the ship and all things are good now after losing 4-5. But after Michigan State, I do feel that way. And I go back even and look at that Rutgers game and realize that things were looking pretty good in that Rutgers game. As we were coming up the stairs, you said after the Rutgers game, you felt like things had been fixed a bit.
Well, yeah, I don't know if
that they were broken.
No, yeah. I mean, I felt pretty good about the Hawkeyes coming out of that game because CJ Frederick came back. He played well. He looked good. Didn't score, but he was effective, and he actually did interviews afterwards saying he felt like he had turned a corner. He had tears in his eyes after a recent practice. Things were finally,
he was feeling
moving
good.
The right direction, and then he doesn't play against Michigan State. So, but then the Hawkeyes, throttle Michigan State. So I know we'll get to that. But yeah, I thought that was a much-needed win against Rutgers. What I noticed right out of the gate, Mark and Ross, the defensive intensity was better. I know
Completely.
Rutgers missed a bunch of shots, yeah. but you just liked what you saw out there. This wasn't a team that's fallen apart. It seemed like it had banded together just a little bit. So I was encouraged, and then obviously Saturday was even better.
Mark, what was your takeaway from the Rutgers game? Were you more, again, I know it's hard after the Michigan State game to kind of go back. After that Rutgers game, were you thinking, hey, things looked different here tonight, or were you a little bit more hesitant like I was?
No, I really thought they did look different. I thought, I wasn't surprised Iowa won, but I was surprised by the margin. I thought that would be a much more competitive game, and I think Iowa kind of took it to Rutgers a little bit. Chad mentioned the defense. Certainly Rutgers' shooting was off, and I think Iowa gets some credit for that. And I thought it was a really impressive win. I thought they looked really determined. They looked a little bit ticked off, frankly, about that one they let get away in Bloomington and should have been. So it was kind of like, after they lost that gap in Minnesota and they came back and suddenly they, got on that little five-game win streak. I think they're really upset about what happened up there, and I think that carried over, and I think maybe the same thing's happening here.
One of the things we talked about the last couple of weeks, Chad, and you had brought this to our attention a couple times, was Joe Wieskamp had not really been consistent. I mean, he'd been good, been really good for the Hawkeyes this year, but he hadn't been consistent, hadn't been able to really string together multiple games where it looked like Joe Wieskamp, where he was consistent throughout the 40 minutes. I would say this was the week where that came too, right? I mean, Joe Wieskamp was really good in two straight games.
Yeah, Big Ten Player of the Week. Has he ever done that, Mark? I don't even know if he has.
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I don't remember it happening. I mean, it's a tough league to be Player of the Week. 14 teams.
Yeah, I know. Bo Hannon got it this year for the first time. I was surprised by that when he had it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we should know that, right?
But it feels like...
I really don't keep track of that.
I don't either.
I think it's that meaningful, but whatever.
But I guess when you have a league this strong, the Big Ten is on pace to become the top, one of the top two conferences of all time, 2021 Big Ten. When you're the Player of the Week, that's pretty significant. And I thought Wieskamp, to your point, Ross, to make your point, he had good first and second halves in both the games last week, which he's been great in the first half of lots of games.
Most games, right?
Yeah, most games, right. And it feels like he's turned a corner too. And obviously that's a little bit has maybe come at the expense of Luka Garza. His production's dipped a bit, and I know we can probably talk about that. But, yeah, I mean, Wieskamp, to me, was, I don't think this is real debatable, the best player on the floor in both games. You know, and that includes the National Player of the Year candidate. So he's been really good, and that's I really think if he's playing like this, this Iowa team is can really go places.
There are a lot of other factors in those two wins. The great game from Jack Nungy. Good performances. Connor McCaffrey came out and shot lights out this last week. So there's other things, but nobody's going to push back on Wieskamp was kind of the deciding factor there. You talked about CJ, but didn't get too much into that. Mark, what do we know right now about CJ Frederick and this injury? Like, what is there any status at all that we can that we get or can share?
Yeah, no. I mean, we asked obviously Franny about today, and. You know, I was at the game Saturday. He came out. He looked okay in warm-ups, the first round of warm-ups, and he didn't come back out of the locker room the next time. So we were told he was questionable. And then, right before tip-off, he was in street clothes. So obviously, he's not going to play. But it sounds like he was okay Wednesday after that game. But then Thursday and Friday, Fran said he had pain both days. So he said he's not going to put him out there if he's in pain. It's not fair to the young man. So to me, it sounds like maybe a little bit of a setback even. And I think we're right back to square one with him. I think, honestly, it's going to be, again, every game you got to go there and show up early and see if he's warming up or if he's in a suit or where he is or what if he's in a boot. I don't know what's going to be next. But I don't think there's any clarity there. I don't think there's going to be the rest of the season. I was asked that on the radio show yesterday, too, about, could I just rest him up and save him for March? And it doesn't sound like that kind of injury. I mean, it just sounds like it's going to be there. Lingering no matter what, so you're just going to try to play him when you can, when he has a good day, which he did Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You're going to play him. When he doesn't have a good day, you're going to have to sit him.
Yeah, man. That's true. We'll see. I think, that was, he's got 5 days now between the Michigan State game and mm-hmm. Thursday's Wisconsin game. That should help a ton, you would think. And I don't really see an issue of, we know the basis of the injury, which we discussed last week, the foot injury, is going to be lingering. He's probably if it may require surgery after the season.
Lingering and unpredictable.
Yeah.
Right? It can vary drastically from day to day or even within a day, as Mark is talking about what happens when you're out there warming up and all of a sudden you're in street clothes.
Yeah. So I don't think people should. I've gotten past the point where the thought process of, okay, just rest him for 3 weeks and I'll be fine. I think. It's more of a take him when you can get him. That's my opinion, and I think that's Iowa's approach. Yeah. I think that's CJ's approach too, frankly. He wants to give when he can, and take what you can get from him, and don't think that Fran's throwing him out there irresponsibly. It's a case of if he feels good, he's going to play. If he can't go, he can't go. So, but I do – what do you – I mean, I guess we can get into this now, but it seems like, based on the Michigan State game – and they did play better, in that Indiana game that they lost on the road in the Ohio State game without Frederick. It seems like they've adjusted a little bit better without him now. They're finding, obviously Connor stepping up was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he had C.J. Frederick-like numbers against Michigan State, frankly.
Is he 4 of 6? I got the box score here. I could look at
16 points. 6 of 8 from the floor, 4 of 6 from three. And Keegan Murray, of course, in the starting lineup, stepping up there a little bit more. So that it seems like they are finding their identity a little bit more without him. So they're not as panicked, I don't think, without him, like they were that first Indiana game. What do you think, Mark? Do you agree with that consensus?
Yeah, I think they're realizing that this is the way it's going to be the rest of the season. They can't let CJ's, status, derail the entire season. I mean, people think that, I know he's important to this team, but you can't make one guy, one guy's absence can't be the reason why you don't advance in March. I mean, they realize they got to get it together here without him. And certainly they'd love to have him in the lineup, and they'll take him when they can get him. But I really thought even Jack Nungy, too, stepping up.
That's a good name, Mark.
Starting to hit some more three balls, too. Yeah, I think they realize they got guys. I mean, if CJ's first absence is really that damaging, then this team did not have the depth that we thought it had. And I do think the team has a lot of depth. Yeah. So I do think they can survive without him. certainly you'd rather have them. There's no question any team would rather have all starters intact, but doesn't always happen that way. And so I think Chad's right. I mean, what they did at Michigan State without him was really, really impressive. I mean, Michigan State is not that good this year, but still, it's Michigan State. It's a Big Ten team. And being by 30, my goodness, I think it really shows. And maybe the team just got kind of tired of hearing about it. Like, you know, you're not as good as CJ. Maybe they decided to go and prove it. And I think Joe Wieskamp has really, really stepped up in CJ's absence. And he needs to, as you mentioned earlier, Chad, I think he's played his best basketball of his career. And they're going to need that night in and night out, because without CJ, you know, there's a bigger burden on him. I think he knows that. I think he's accepting that.
Mark just put a lot of the answers on the table that I gave to Anthony, who called in the other day and said, what was different in this Michigan State game without C.J. Frederick as opposed to those games? Yeah, R. Anthony called into to Fanatics earlier in the week and said, hey, what was different?
Oh, my gosh, I didn't know that.
With that Michigan State game.
Calling for us.
Oh, he'll probably call in tonight. I mean, you know, it's Hawk Central. Right, wouldn't be a Hawk Central without Anthony, right? But I said a lot of those same things, Mark. I brought up Jack Nungy. Yeah. So how do you win without C.J. Frederick? You win because Jack Nungy has his best game as a Hawkeye, maybe. 18 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. Wonderful night from Connor McCaffrey, going 4-for-6 from three-point range. Great night from Joe Wieskamp. Joe Toussaint had good minutes. Everybody. I mean, up and down, the team had wonderful minutes. Keegan Murray has a great game starting, getting 8 points in 16 minutes. So all of those things combined to make it easier on CJ, and to not have CJ there. And I think you put another key ingredient into it, Mark. Michigan State's just not that good.
Yeah, that's the worst Michigan team I've seen in a long time, maybe last 20 years or so. But still, I think Iowa made them look worse than
probably exactly
other.
Right. They're still
that was impressive.
Yeah, they still you beat a team by 30 when you're much better than them, and that's a good thing. Yeah. So Chad, the defense, the Rutgers game, I thought it was obvious. The defense was better. There's more intensity. I always struggle with what word to put on defense when it just is more productive, when defense is working, when you're getting shot clock violations, when you're forcing bad shots. It's hard to say it's effort, it's strategy, it's, you know, we used to be able to look at that, and we could say Fran was really good at throwing those kind of junk defenses at teams and then mixing things up and keeping teams off their rhythm. I don't know that it's necessarily that we've seen. It does seem a little bit more like effort, communication, or one of those more simple fundamental parts of defense.
Well, Fran talked about this a little bit after the Michigan State game, right, Mark? He said he felt like he, as a coach, had become, and he doesn't usually admit stuff like this, that he became a little bit too reliant on the zone defense you know, at points during the season. Which I've always thought he should commit to zone and be good at the zone because they don't have guys that are great at man-to-man. Okay. However, he made a very good point, I thought, and obviously the success has been there, but that they just decided to make a little bit renewed intensity a focus on man-to-man. Just like, okay, if you're not going to play good zone defense, we're going to put you in man-to-man and you're going to get around screens, you're going to hustle, you're going to stay with your guy, and you're going to do the best you can. And I feel like that has actually helped them a little bit. I don't know. Did you find that a little bit unusual for him? Because he does not usually, admit mistakes in terms of defensive strategy, because I know he gets questioned on it so much. What did you think of that, Mark?
Well, he was definitely open about it. He said he stayed with his own too long. And the word he uses is challenge. He challenges guys to play man-to-man. But basically, that's you're right, Chad. I mean, it's this is on you now to get this fixed, and it can require, you know, even he's kind of said for the game, we're not the most athletically talented guys. I thought that was a pretty interesting admission too. It's true, but I said if we play five guys together and we all do our part, we know we can be better. So they were embarrassed what they saw on film sometimes when they rewatched games, and so you know, it was a little bit of a gut check, you know, appealing basically to their manhood. And I think you've seen some results here. Now, obviously, the three teams that we're talking about, they're not the most offensively gifted teams in the league, but still, what they've done, I mean, you know, Rutgers missed 15 of his first 16 three-pointers. You know, Michigan State just looked terrible. They were on a standstill most of that game. I don't know what offense they were trying to run, but it wasn't apparent. and they made them look really, really bad. And they weren't even functional in that game for a lot of that game. So, that's the one thing. If you're a veteran team, you've been through it, you know, 3-4 years, some of these guys, you should have that kind of advantage. You should have that kind of mental edge, right, where you can just say, you know, I've been there before. I know I'm better than you, and I'm getting the advantage over you. and use it.
Chad, any other hoop stuff? I know we before we wrap up here at 7 o'clock, we're going to start to preview what the end of this season looks like, mm-hmm. because it is it's a gauntlet here that the Hawks are about to run. A couple of games against Wisconsin to wrap things up. You're going to play at Ohio State. You're going to play at Michigan. Host Penn State, is that right? Host Penn State.
Yeah, and there's a Nebraska game in there too.
I keep forgetting about the Nebraska game because it's not on. It will be there somewhere. Yeah, okay. So a couple of wins that are going to be handed to you with Penn State and Nebraska, I hope. But then it's some tough games in there. I mean, Wisconsin and Lunardi today had Michigan and Ohio State both on the one line. So I want to talk to you for a little while before we wrap up the show about the potential for what could happen with this definitely. Hawkeye basketball team, good and bad. But when we get back, there's some non-basketball stuff that's happening in the university here in February, and I want to get into some of that. There's been some changes in the football program, I noticed. And there's also, we talked just briefly about a lawsuit that was coming towards Gary Barta's doorstep again, and there have been some movements, I think, kind of related to that lawsuit. We can talk about all that, because there are changes within the Iowa athletic program, or maybe reverse from changes. Well, anyway, we'll have Chad break it all down for us, and then we'll get back into basketball, and we can take your phone calls also, 284-5966. It's a Tuesday version of Hawk Central here on KXNO, 1460 AM and 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Here we go. Tuesday afternoon version of Hawk Central here on KXNO. Glad to have you along on the program. I'm Ross Peterson. Chad Lystico is in studio with me. And Mark Emmert, both of the Des Moines Register, on the phone with us, ready to take your calls at 284-5966. There are a few things that we want to pick apart, because we have a few callers that want to get back into basketball. We'll get to basketball, but there's some football stuff. There's just some general athletic department stuff that we should probably try to get off the table here. Let's start first with some of the changes that have happened around this Iowa football team. Chad, I saw that Coach Polasek is no longer with the Iowa football team. He's going to be an offensive coordinator?
Wyoming, yep.
Wyoming, yep. Okay. What were some of the other changes that happened here this week? Because there were some more, right?
Yeah. I can't remember if we touched on these last week or not, so let's review. Polasek, yeah, to Wyoming as offensive coordinator, from what I understand, he's wants to be a head coach someday. I think he just wanted to be in charge. Good for him. I'm sure it's a pay cut, right, Mark? And then, but he gets to run an offense, and there's something to be said about that. And I don't think he was, no offense to Brian Ferentz, obviously, but he wasn't going to replace Brian Ferentz as offensive coordinator at this point. So, Derek Foster, that's a big loss as running backs coach. He goes to the LA Chargers officially. So Iowa has two replacements to make on the offensive staff. Big hires, in my opinion. Especially in the wake of what happened this summer. You've got to be able to bring aboard guys that believe in moving this thing forward the right way. And so it very, very important hires for Kirk Ferentz.
And hadn't even considered that, Chad. These are really big hires. Mark, have you given any thought to how Coach Ferentz goes about replacing them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's rare for him to have to fill spots. As Chad pointed out, it's been what, 4 or 5 years since he's been in that position. And,
four, yep.
And one of those guys he brought back was Ken O'Keefe, so he kind of went to a familiar name there. But I would think he would, recently, Derek Foster, Kelton Copeland, even Polasek, he's gone kind of younger. You guys have a little more energy, maybe some new ideas. Obviously, you want that on the recruiting trail for sure, because that's a really important part of these jobs. So I would think that I'm sure he's got a long list of people that he wants to talk to. He's well connected in the sport. And I personally think he'll take his time, as Chad pointed out today, and I think that he'll probably go out and find something similar, some younger guys that they bring something new to the staff, something that is missing, some new ideas or whatever, and challenge some thinking that's been here. Ingrained, yeah. And that's a healthy thing to do.
I thought Mark was going to take the Ken O'Keefe line and weave us into how Coach Ferentz was going to get Bob Stoops to join the staff. I thought that's where this was.
Running back Stoops. Yeah,
I'm really curious to see what he does, because I know the prevailing wisdom, always the knee-jerk reaction is always like, okay, what guy with Hawk ties would want to come back and, be here. But I think, especially after what happened this summer, I think you need I think this is a time to bring in unique perspectives, different perspectives, somebody that might push against the norm, you know, and challenge things, like you said, Ross and Mark. So I'm very curious to see what he ends up with here, who he ends up with here. I talked to Reese Morgan the other day for folks that read that article on the website or in the paper. And, you know, I don't think we can rule out also that he might reshuffle some roles, possibly, to find the right fit of assistant coaches. So let's say, for example, you know, he brings in, you know, a guy that he really wants on the, you know, a young up-and-comer on the – it could be assistant defensive line coach. You move Jay Neiman to head defensive line coach. You move Kevin Bell to offensive line. You know, something like that. You know, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but Ferentz has been known to be flexible in that role, in those roles. So I think everything is on the table here, and I do think he will take his time. However, I think it is important to probably have these coaches in place by spring practice in late March. And to that point, Ross, you asked about what else? So they lose Mark Kallenberger, too. He's not coming back.
Right. That's a big one.
Starting tackle.
And whoever replaces Coach Polisek is going to be working in that water.
So that's a really big job, that offensive line job, because they've got so many young recruits. They're bringing in five freshmen. Two are already on campus. Probably the best offensive line class they've maybe ever had or close to it. They got a ton of four stars in there. So, you know, you want the right coach to bring these guys along. So, really, fascinating hires. I don't know where he's going to lean on this. He always keeps his stuff pretty close to the vest. And just interested to see how it plays out, honestly.
Right. We had a day earlier this week where we took a bunch of phone calls during the Fanatics program about Hawkeye football, kind of about Hawkeye football, because Iowa football, in a way, became a bit of a national story again this last week when Chris Doyle was hired by the Jacksonville Jaguars and Urban Meyer to oversee their strength and conditioning program. His title was a bit different. It wasn't exactly strength and conditioning coach or coordinator, but it was in that arena that he is so has been so successful in. Mark, I just want to ask you, what were your thoughts when you saw that news that Jacksonville and Urban Meyer were going to bring Coach Doyle on their staff? Was that a shock to you?
Well, we'd heard the rumors, so no, it wasn't. You know, at that moment, it wasn't. But
I'll tell you this: I hadn't heard the rumors, so I was shocked.
Yeah. A lot of people were. I think certainly nationally, even there was a lot of, I would say, even outrage is not too strong of a word about that. Yeah, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about him. You know, honestly, I mean, I didn't really expect him to resurface so soon, and so, you know, and such a high profile job, and you could see, you know, why that was probably not a good idea by both parties, because people have not forgotten him. It was just last summer, and certainly. What he was accused of is very serious, and, you know, obviously, you know, he was never convicted of anything, so, you know, give the guy his due there, but just that whole perception out there is not what you want to carry into your new team, I wouldn't think, if you're Urban Meyer, especially over a strength coach in the NFL. Who cares? You know, can anybody name a strength coach? I mean, I don't know who the Vikings strength coach is. I don't care. I mean, I hope he's doing a good job, but, you know, it's just such a needless thing to do for Urban Meyer, and I think it just really shows, again, maybe a little bit of his arrogance. You know, like, this isn't college. I can just hire anybody I want, and I'll just say I vetted them. You know, whatever that process was involved, I have no idea. But it just felt like a PR, disaster for no reason, really, honestly. I mean, he'll find somebody else that'll help those guys lift weights. I mean, those guys already know how to do it. They're all pro athletes, for God's sake. It's just such a silly move.
I love it. Mark, I love everything you're saying. I even tried to ask Chris some of these questions this week. I said, listen, I'm not trying to be a smartass. I'm really not. It's going to sound like what I'm going to say is being a smartass. Is Chris Doyle that much better than everybody else on the planet at telling people how to lift weights? I mean, obviously, there are people that think he is because they continue to pay him a lot of money to have them tell people how to lift weights. And so it's something that I didn't understand either. But I'm kind of glad to hear you take that angle. I completely agree that this goes back to Urban Meyer just kind of being untouchable, spending a lifetime being untouchable. Urban Meyer has made some really poor decisions in his career that have affected people's lives in a very big way, and I don't ever see him own up to it, ever. And this reeked of that to me again. Like, yeah, like you said, Mark, I can do whatever I want because I'm Urban Blankenmeyer. They hired me to come in here and fix this stuff, and they're just going to get out of my way and let me do whatever I want to do. Different world. Chad, was there any Did this get brought up at all with Coach Ferentz? I mean, I'm assuming Coach Doyle is kind of the name that shall not be mentioned over there in Iowa City right now. But has there been anything from what the reaction has been to Chris Doyle?
No, I mean, I asked if Ferentz was going to do any media, and it doesn't sound like he will for a while. So okay. We have not got a chance to talk to him. But I think it's, you know, when that time comes, I think a fair question is, you know, were you or anybody on this staff, you know, approached by the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, in terms of vetting Coach Doyle? Because I think that's important to know, don't you?
I do.
And I pulled this quote from July, I don't know, 30th. This is the day the investigation came out publicly. And, you know, Ferentz never completely denounced Doyle. He said, "I couldn't envision Chris being able to go into the room that Monday and being effective with our players," and then added, "Chris is an outstanding coach. I know with his next opportunity, he's going to do a fantastic job." So I think those words are something that, you know, you could look at and say, yeah, maybe he did endorse him. Maybe, you know, maybe he didn't. Maybe they were never approached. But I thought that quote, to me, that came right to the front of my mind when I saw the Doyle news. I thought, oh, boy. That's going to be used against Iowa football on the recruiting trail, because you're going to say this is what Kirk Ferentz said, and they're going to have to answer to that. Frankly,
man, they're okay. So I want to know if I'm taking this too personal, because I'm an Iowa fan. I've lived here in Iowa my entire life, but when I hear the name Art Briles, my nose turns up at Baylor. When I hear the names of guys that have done nasty things at places, when I hear, quite frankly, I'm not a Bob Knight fan. When I hear Bob Knight, my nose turns up and I think about Indiana. We have this stuff that happens around the country at different universities that give them a black eye, and it seems to have lingering effects. Mark, does this, Chris, when I see PTI talking about Chris Doyle, I don't see it as a conversation about Jacksonville. I see it as a conversation about Iowa. Is this the type of thing that has longer legs than we think?
Yeah, you might be onto something, because I hadn't really considered that until I saw kind of the reaction. And you're right. Everybody mentioned, you know, the former Iowa strength coach, the other guy in trouble. Iowa was kind of dragged back into the headline with this news. And I'm guessing, you know, whenever Chris Doyle does get another job, it'll be the same process, right? Everybody's going to remember what he did at Iowa. That's the only place he's really been. He was here for 20 years. I mean, that's his whole resume, basically. So, you know, it's unfortunate, I think, in a way, but it's also something that, you know, you have to be realistic about it. That's the way it's going to be. And I was surprised how people did not forget about, you know, Chris Doyle and what happened last summer. Because, you know, you kind of think you're in Iowa and it's a strength coach, and
people
might remember, you know, there was something going on there, but who would remember that was actually Chris Doyle that was the guy? But boy, everybody sure seemed to. And
millions of people.
And maybe they were surprised too.
Yeah.
I mean, national media was still talking about Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, right.
Prominent national media.
It lingered, no doubt. What's the other one that I thought we should talk about that's off the field stuff, but maybe this is the good segue into this right now. Mark, we're probably going to lean on you for a lot of this stuff about what exactly is happening, and I'm not even sure the legal verbiage to use here. There is a conversation around Title IX. There's a lawsuit that's in some stage right now, and then we learned today that there's actually been some walking back on the idea of taking away some programs. What's happening? Can you kind of clear up all the mess for us?
Yeah, I can try. I mean, certainly, when you say walking back, they have reinstated women's swimming, and it's here for good, according to Gary Barta. He made that move announcement on Monday. Obviously, that's the sport that's at issue here, because it's the only women's sport that he was going to cut or tried to cut, and that was the spur of the lawsuit, and that is still pending. You know, the university is kind of still arguing that it wants to, like, get rid of that injunction, the judge order. But in the meantime, you know, Gary Barr said, "Well, I'm just going to bring it back because this is going to linger for a long time, this legal action." I'm not sure why it has to now, but both sides are still going to argue some things, I guess. And something, you know, the only thing that might happen is, you know, Iowa might be forced to add another women's sport. I mean, because that's one thing the lawyer is pushing for over here, Title IX lawyer, is saying that not only are you out of compliance just by adding women's, you know, swimming back, you still are. You know, you still have more opportunities you need to offer for women's athletes at Iowa to comply with Title IX, and he wants to get into court still and have Iowa show its numbers. let us see who you are actually counting on your roster for women's rowing, women's track and field, women's cross country, women's softball. Let's see who these people are. Are they actually practicing daily? Are they actually participating in games? Are they actually traveling on the road? Are these genuine roster spots for women, or are you just padding your numbers? Was what he thinks. Now, Gary Barta denies that.
Wow.
But it may come to that in court, and does he really want to go into open court and try to prove that? It doesn't seem like he's too eager to do that. So we'll see. But right now, women's swimming is back, and it's back for good, according to Gary Barta. So that's the big news. The men's sports are still not going to be brought back. There's still a group that's out there trying to actively bring those back. They've raised $3 million. They say they've got $6 million pledged that people will donate if they can bring those sports back. And they think they've got a funding mechanism to keep them going. You know, beyond that, Gary Barta was not interested in that kind of conversation. He said it needs to be a long-term solution. It can't just be for 1 or 2 years. So they're still fighting that battle. And like I said, I think Gary Barta actually, it was interesting. He, in his opening remarks today, he talked about women's wrestling. And that he said that it is a sport they're interested in exploring, adding. He said, right now we don't have the money for it. But that is one of the sports that certainly the lawyers mentioned as Iowa, you know, could add to come into compliance with Title IX. And it is an NCAA-sponsored sport now, as of last July. So the fact that he brought that up makes me think maybe that's where this is all heading. Maybe Iowa brings back swimming and adds wrestling.
Wow.
And this whole lawsuit goes away.
All right, snotty question. Grandview has women's wrestling. How expensive is it?
He claims $750,000 to $1.5 million per year, and that's obviously going to be for the coaches, the recruiting, the travel. I mean, women's swimming was $1.5 million a year in his budget.
Okay.
Obviously, they got the facilities, so that's right. That's a big help for them right now. So, I mean, to me, that's cheap when you look at their, you know, their overall budget and what they're paying a lot of these coaches, and, you know, obviously the lawsuit that they lost. I mean, $1.5 million a year at the most for a women's wrestling team, and to be among the first in the nation to offer. I mean, Iowa should be the first place women's wrestling comes to prominence, should it not? I mean,
no, absolutely.
Here,
yeah, it should be a race between
right
Iowa and Penn State. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, Tom Brands and Dan Gable have both been out on the stump saying we this is great for our sport. We want to see women's wrestling succeed. We would love to see it become a college sport. So who's a better ambassador for wrestling than those two guys in the state of Iowa? Their voices should carry some weight here, I would think, too. So, I mean, Iowa could really win a PR battle for once, I think. I mean, can you imagine that? Oh, Gary Barta winning a PR battle?
No, I can't. No.
He did that. I mean, there would be a lot of goodwill there, I think. And I'm not sure
it's true.
Visionary enough.
I'd say this. He's
stubborn.
He's due for a PR win. I'll say that. He's,
yeah, absolutely.
He's overdue for one.
This trial is going nowhere, and he was going to lose it. He knows he was going to lose it. That's why he brought the sport back. He would not admit that, but we all know Iowa was going to lose that lawsuit if it got there.
Wow.
You know, it's just he picked a really stupid battle, frankly. But now that he did, now that he stepped in it, I think he can make it right by adding women's wrestling. I really do.
Chad, what is the reaction that you've seen to this? Have you seen a lot of reaction to this? I mean, there's a lot of stuff here, so I don't even know what.
Well, okay, so two things is, number one, it seems like this is something that we've noticed, Mark, a lot of people are very passionate about. It may be a little bit niche for some people, maybe not the mass, but man, there's a lot of passion out there for this topic. Number two is, I do feel a little bit for the men's sports that got cut. You end up cutting three men's sports, and you know, I got to know some of the tennis guys and doing some of that story, and they're just, I mean, the nicest guys in the world. A lot of guys here from overseas that made Iowa City their home, and their sports, cut, done, they did everything right, and that's nothing against any of the, I'm obviously pro Title IX, but you know, it's, you do feel bad, like, okay, women's swimming's back, but what about the men's, you know, men's swimming, sorry, you're still out, you know, so it's it's kind of a little bit of mixed reaction there. You kind of feel for those individuals in this situation.
And I was told that,
go ahead, Mark. No, go ahead.
Gary Barta, he met with the women's swimming team yesterday for 90 minutes. He had not met with them since he announced he was going to cut their sports 6 months ago. So I met with them for 90 minutes, and it was a fairly tense conversation.
I would imagine.
A lot of questions. But I'm told they're in the same facility as the men, and I'm told that he did not want to meet with any of the men. So that basically it's like, we'll all go in this room here with the women, but you guys, you got to stay out there and do your whatever your work is, your conditioning or whatever, and we'll just have this conversation among the women. So I think that did rankle some people. I've heard that, you know, again, why would you ever talk to the men swimmers? He still has not done that, I guess. So there's still a perception over here that he is just really not getting it. You know, he brought it back, and but under duress, and they still don't see him as like somebody that really understands quite, what he did, the depths of what he did, how much he hurt some of these people, these swimmers, these athletes, the parents, the alumni. And there was no apology. I asked the people that were in the meeting. Somebody leaked me some audio of the meeting. There was no apology. There was no admission that he did anything wrong. In fact, it was so interesting in the press conference today. He claims that his decision he made originally to cut the sport, he felt was right, given what he knew at the time. And he felt that the decision he made just now to reinstate it was also right. So I'm just like, how can you be right both times? They're two totally different decisions. Like, how can they both have been right, Gary? But he's just a guy that's never going to admit that he did anything wrong, apparently. And maybe he thinks that that would be used against him in court, potentially. I don't know. But it's just really strange to hear him kind of try to explain the decisions he makes and really just kind of talk in circles.
It sounds, Mark, like, and I know a lot of people in power that are this way. You know, we assume that people that get into power, they've got these golden guts, right? And they're willing to say anything and always be honest. And that's how you get to the top of industry. I know a lot of captains of industry who have made a living out of telling people what they want to hear that are in the room with them, that are really good about, man, yeah, this situation stinks and I had nothing to do with it. This thing that I'm here to apologize to you for, I don't really need to say I'm sorry because I didn't really screw anything up. It's just the darn way the world works.
Yeah.
And they, pandemic. And yeah, right. Yeah. Pandemic. Or, I mean, we can go back with Gary Barta or other people that do this and go back through decades of this being a pattern of if you're in the room with people and they start to talk quiet. Hey, let me tell you something. Uh-oh. They're telling me what they don't want other people to hear. And then when I leave the room, they're going to tell that person what they don't want me to hear. I think that I think that you have nailed a personality trait about Gary Barta. Tough. 284-5966. We'll get back to some basketball. Looks like Randy actually wants to weigh in on what we're chatting about right now. So before we take that quick timeout, let's talk to Randy in Ankeny. Thanks for your phone call, Randy. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing great. What do you want to share with us?
Well, hey, I think there's a difference between a successful program and a program that actually makes a profit. You know, the Iowa wrestling team is great, but I doubt it makes an actual profit. The Iowa State girls basketball team is one of the winningest programs in girls college basketball, and I doubt if it makes a profit.
Right.
So when you look
at... go ahead, Randy. I think you might have cut out. Are you there? I think we lost Randy. I heard him say, so when you look at, and that was it. Randy, so sorry, man.
Yeah, women's basketball, I mean, does has the worst differential in terms of expenses versus profit.
Yeah.
But that, that's...
Yeah.
There's only two sports that make money. So it's, even wrestling doesn't make money.
Football and men's basketball.
Iowa.
Right. Yep. Even when they're packing the car
they still don't make money.
284-5966. We'll wrap up with some basketball. Tough stretch run coming for the Hawkeyes to get to this finish line in a regular season. What do we think happens? We'll tell you when we wrap up Hawk Central next on 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460. Hey! KXNO.
All right, here we go. Going to sprint to the finish line here on Hawk Central, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. We're going to chat hoops as we wrap up this program. And Troy from Urbandale wanted to get us going on that basketball conversation. What do you got on your mind tonight, Troy?
Well, what a great show, first of all. Totally agree with the wrestling take on women's wrestling. Has a huge upside in an Olympic year. I believe it's an Olympic sport. State participation rates were super high. That's a really great idea, guys. One word on the running backs, Coach Van Foster did a great job, and hopefully they find someone that works well with Goodson, because to me he's the fastest back since Tavian. My hoops takes were this. Really like the chemistry of the team, even in the downturn. Like the engagement of the bench. The freshmen really are doing a nice job. I believe they pick up the defensive intensity. I want you to comment on the freshmen. And it's a nice time for the teammates to pick up Luca, because I feel like the burden of the national spotlight's been on him all season. This is a perfect time for others to step up.
Troy, love it, man. Thank you for the phone call. Let's take Troy's phone call and jump into these next couple games, because Luca did struggle against Michigan. As he struggled, I mean, he had 8 points. The stat line's not what we're used to seeing from Luca, but they come away with a really nice win. What needs to happen here, Chad? Got a game coming up Thursday night with Wisconsin, and then it's a tough turn here to get to the finish line.
Yeah, honestly, I think these Wisconsin games are huge starting Thursday. And it's a game Iowa can win. Yeah, this is not a great Wisconsin team. It's a very good Wisconsin team. But this is the type of game you got to win. Iowa's in fourth in the standings. Wisconsin's in fifth. We've talked for weeks now about how important it is to get a top four seed. Obviously, if you win this game, you know, the Hawkeyes right now are 9-5 in the Big Ten. Wisconsin's 9-6. So win this, you're 10-5. Wisconsin's 9-7, and you got a head-to-head over them. That's huge. And then they'll
match up again the last – well, again, yeah. we don't know about the Nebraska makeup.
But, yeah, that should happen. Yeah. So, you know, essentially have a two-game lead there on Wisconsin with four to play – or five to play, I guess. So, I don't know. Do you see it the same way, Mark? I mean, I think this is the elusive – does Fran get to the double bye portion of the Big Ten calendar?
Yeah. They're finally playing some teams that are above them or equal to them in the standings. Obviously, beating Rutgers and Michigan State is great, but they're both below you already anyway, so you just kept them down there. So if you're Iowa, yeah, Wisconsin, I think, is really the measuring stick here. I don't think they're going to catch Michigan in the standings. Illinois is going to be tough as well. So you got Michigan, Ohio State, two against Wisconsin. Those are the games you got to kind of win, I think, probably three of those four. And you'll be in pretty good shape heading into that Big Ten tournament. So, yeah, I agree it's huge. Wisconsin is a very veteran team, though. They have their identity. They know their identity. It's not going to be easy. Iowa's going to have to basically just impose its will there because Wisconsin's not going to beat itself.
What do you think happens?
It's going to be two really intriguing matchups. I actually think they're going to split, and the home teams win them. So Iowa loses up there and wins at home.
Okay, I can see that. That's extremely possible. I mean, Wisconsin is a good team. They're going to come with the game plan to try to beat up on Garza and play tough perimeter defense, or all the things that Wisconsin is kind of known for are the things that have given the Hawkeyes fits this year here, Chad. They know how heavy this game is. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think I've got Iowa going 2-0 this week. Okay. I know that's a little optimistic, because I do think Wisconsin can match Garza with Reavers and Potter in the post. But I just like Iowa's outside shooting. I mean, I think to beat Wisconsin, you got to be able to hit the threes, and Iowa can do that. So I kind of like their chances Thursday. But don't sleep on Penn State. That's a tricky opponent. I know they just lost to Nebraska, but they've beaten some good teams. And yeah, that's tricky. So if you beat Wisconsin, don't sleep on Penn State on Sunday.
I'll put the Hawks at 2-0 this week also. I think that I trust in the performances I've seen these last couple games. Steve is calling in from St. Paul, Minnesota. He wants to wrap things up with some trivia. Steve, fire away, sir. How are you?
I'm ready for you.
Go ahead.
Here we go. Luka is 44 points from number one on the all-time scoring list, and I have two trivia questions, rapid-fire questions for you. Three, okay?
Okay.
And I want Ross to answer first, followed by Chad and Mark.
Okay.
Question number one. AC Earl was a big, just like Luka. AC was number four on the all-time list at 1779 points.
Okay.
And you have to come within 10. How many three-pointers did AC Earl make in his four-year career? You have to come within 10.
I'll go in his four-year career, AC Earl, 10.
Chad and Mark.
I'll go, I guess 11. Because I know he made at least one.
Right. What is it, Steve? We're going to run out of time. Mark says three.
Two.
He made two in his four-year career.
Yeah. Steve Luka made 104 so far.
Steve, thank you for the phone call. Steve, call in again next week. If you continue with these trivia questions, I like this. This is fun to do. And AC Earl, man, that's like 10-year-old Ross is loving that. Love those names. Steve, thanks so much. Mark, thanks so much. Chad, thanks so much. Hawks, go get a couple wins. We'll be back at it maybe next Tuesday again. We'll find out.